Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, October 3rd, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is 57 degrees, very dark, overcast, foggy, and rainy, according to the forecast here in upstate New York. It's been that way all weekend. I don't know. It poured and poured and poured Saturday. It's getting kind of soggy out. Everything's starting to turn yellow and orange. So I think fall has officially sprung. I don't know. We're pretty far into it by now, a couple weeks. So where do we leave off Friday? We titled the show Dangers of Forcing Human Evolution with Technology. We spent an entire week kind of digging into technology and the insanity of things such as CRISPR and tetrahertz and cyber wars and insane. I don't even know. I'm just pulling things out of a hat. I think the last few weeks have been pretty interesting. We looked at some stuff that isn't typically out there that we've, of course, been establishing the connections for a very long time. This directed eugenics that is happening, the elite that are purchasing up these technologies or using taxpayer funded dollars to sprinkle at universities to have our children create these technologies that then they spin out into an IPO and create some sort of small public company where all the tech investors and the venture funding groups can go dump all their cash and make bazillions of dollars in this new 21st century medicine, keeping you young forever, longevity medicine, and getting off this rock. Those are some of the big investments for the 21st century. Good old Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg. We're going to talk about Elon Musk today. I kind of like Elon Musk, though. So, but I've been proven wrong before. I have, sometimes I have a gullible gene. I tend to like people and then find out that, oh no, they were evil incarnate. There was just something about him I liked. Elon Musk, though, I think he's quite the visionary. And even though he plays both sides of the fence and he's fully sucked into the machine, he's working hand in hand with NASA. We looked at a few stories last week where he was renting out that spaceport. He's also renting out Cape Canaveral down in Florida, but he's got the one up in New Mexico as well that he's been doing stuff at. You know, NASA lent him, as part of that 20-year-plus lease agreement that he had, they were allowing him to utilize some of their brain talent as well to work on these problems. And I'm sure that NASA is thinking, and I know that there was some sort of collaborative licensing agreement. Any technology that was discovered, they were able to share. So, you know, I don't know. Reminds me a lot of what we found out with Secretary of Defense Ash Carter creating the DIUX division, that experimental division, where they're bringing all the tech titans now into the Department of Defense on an advisory board. And there were a lot of them. We had Amazon, Jeff Bezos, and CEO of Google. Oh, I can't remember his name right now. He's so gross. And Eric Schmidt. Ugh. Every time I see him, he makes me want to run away. Cass Sunstein, Obama's crafter of the message, be able to psychologically manipulate you and get you resistant consumers to go along. Yeah, all those people, plus the synthetic biology dude from the Broad Institute, and you know, all these people just from diverse areas that we're going to help the Department of Defense cure difficult technical issues. Yeah, well, difficult technical issues. And one of the difficult technical issues is how all this technology is affecting us in ways that they apparently never thought of. Just like anything. Oh, here's this newfangled red dye. in this no sugar soda. If you were from Buffalo, no sugar pop. Back in 1972. That's the newfangled thing. We just came out with it. Make sure you buy it and you drink it. And all these people drank this glowing red liquid full of fake sugar. And then they come out like 6, 8, 10 years later. They're like, oh, shit. Guess what? That red dye and that fake sugar substitute both cause cancer. Oh. And I mean, guys, it's like freaking Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football. How many times have we seen this over and over and over again? Surprise. Don't fall for it. I don't fall for it anymore. You know, they've groomed us. And I really think it goes all the way back to Edward Bernays, early 1900s. They groomed us to follow the dangling carrot. I should call this the dangling carrot show. We've talked about that dangling carrot so many times. But that dangling carrot is really our conditioning. You know, years ago, oh, I'd have to say it was probably the end of the 90s. My desktop was one big picture. It was a big snail crawling across the screen with somebody's arm with a stick and a string and a carrot tied to the end of it out in front of that snail. And of course, the snail never made it there. I had that picture on my desktop forever. So it was always trying to remind me not to chase after the dangling carrot, because no matter how fast you go, no matter how much of your personal life and personal time you put aside, how many hours of overtime you work, how many times you put what you thought was what you should be chasing first in front of your friends or your family or sleep or eating or just life in general. How many times in the end, in retrospect, you look back and you said, that extra 3 hours didn't mean jack shit. Nobody cared. Nobody appreciated the fact that you put your whole life on hold, that you sold your happiness. You know, when I look back on the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of hours that I have worked in my lifetime on projects, and I get into a frenzy and I just go for 18, 20 hours, you know, we'd be crazy working half the night. Because it was important. At least it was important to me at the time. And I thought somebody cared. I thought it meant something. I thought it made a difference. When I look back in retrospect now, someone had said to me a long time ago, and so what are they going to put on your tombstone? She worked hard. Like, in the end, who cares? And I mean, I'm not saying don't work hard. Because that's kind of a pet peeve of mine. I don't like lazy people. I hate to tell you. I have a big problem when people decide they want to be lazy around my house here and I see shit all over the coffee table and stuff that needs to be vacuumed and things that need to be put away. I don't like that at all. Always get your stuff done, then you can chill out. But the fact that being a workaholic, which I think is something that you're conditioned for, my dad was a workaholic. I grew up seeing that. My grandparents were workaholics. My uncle was a workaholic. So their work and their jobs and their businesses were the absolute center of their lives. That's how I've always been. But doesn't mean it's the right thing. I mean, I'm starting to have my epiphanies now, many years down the line. After all these years of investing my youth and my life, my time, my effort, my brain power to all these other things that I've helped all these other people who never really appreciated the time, effort, and energy that went into them, all these different corporations, they were just a number. And as we're moving further and further down the line here, now we're going to have robots taking all the jobs. You know, you're a human capital. In the end, isn't going to matter at all. And that's the saddest part here. You know, we built this planet for good or for bad. A lot of the time it was for bad. A lot of us were deluded or lied to. You know, I get very upset this weekend, actually. I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday. It was Saturday. I really did some deep thinking. Just about this whole, deception that I am now fighting against as a mama bear with fangs. Now, I literally put 25 years of my life into technology, being an evangelist, going all over the United States at different points in time for different companies, for different jobs that I did, selling this to people, whether it be CEO of a corporation or a student who just started learning computers who came out of Banana Republic. You know, I sold this technology and the wonders and all the great stuff that it could do and why you should embrace it and why we should sell it and why it should be ubiquitous everywhere and all the great and wonderful things it's going to do for our children. And when I get to where we ended the show on Friday and we read two stories and I gave you a synopsis of the third, but we might actually read the third story just for emphasis. I couldn't get there on Friday. We took a look at three stories, one titled, I Used to Be a Human Being. And that was about the gentleman who was a little bit younger than me, but had spent a lot of his adult life working online and gaining an audience, and he was a journalist, till he discovered that this dangling dopamine carrot was sucking him in, and it was sucking his real life away and replacing it with this online one, where these people really weren't real. And his audience was there, but they didn't really care about him. And he was losing all of his real friends. All to this online world of flashing lights that give you that dopamine dose. It's just like a freaking slot machine. Then we read the second story about Generation Z. And that was a 13-year-old girl that had to go for her second emergency psychiatric intervention. After her parents took away her Chromebook, which was given to her by school, which got her into Minecraft and chat rooms, which turned her into a complete junkie. And I told you, I've run across some of these exact, not exact same behaviors, but the same tendencies that got me looking into all of this in the first place. There definitely is a market reaction when children are put in front of technology that, A, number one off the top, changes them completely. They go from being your child to being something you don't even recognize. But secondly, as time goes on, it becomes more and more of a requirement to get more dopamine. And we did a whole bunch of shows. If you search Before the First Cup and dopamine, I bet you'll probably see five or six shows come up in the search engine. We did a lot of research on that. Go hit the notes. I think back then I was doing some pretty extensive notes still. But there's a lot of proof. And they've also, in their research, discovered video gaming creates the same sort of dopamine reaction. Remember, DARPA had been doing a lot of research on brain chemicals, which makes me suspicious about all the stuff that's been going on. This is the very first game. And I worked in the very beginnings of electronic component distribution. I helped craft the standards for online e-commerce for the very first time when e-commerce occurred on the internet. Yes, in the 90s. I don't know. It's probably about 97, 98 maybe. Hasn't been that long. Has not been 30 years we've been selling stuff online, that's for sure. But back then, we had no idea what was going to happen or how this was going to turn out. It was just a big free-for-all. Well, we discover now that video games, so that's what I was going to say. I saw the very first person video game, which happened to be a flight simulator, gets queued up on our system. And I remember the day I saw it. And you guys know me. Anything that makes you raise an eyebrow and go, huh? I always tell you, is something worth paying attention to? Well, that day we saw that video game get queued. And we used to get like $5 games, which is the greatest thing. But they wanted us to sell them. So they would give them to us for cheap. But, you know, you'd go to the you'd go to the store in the mall. I don't remember what that place was, electronic something in the mall that used to sell the games way, way, way back when. They were $50 a piece. So the fact that we got them for $5, we paid attention. And I saw a video game that was skewed with the manufacturer listed as Department of Defense. Hey, my two buddies who sat one in front and one on the other side of the wall for me used to chuck shit over the over the cubes when we were bored. But I said to the guys, I'm like, hey, did you guys see this? There's a brand new game with the vendor of Department of Defense. And you know, now I look back at it years later, and I mean, this was a few years ago I first realized this, but it's just over 18 years. It's like 22 years now since that came out. And think about it. It was a first-person flying application. And now we have an entire generation of drone pilots that sit in a room flying drones that are overseas in some place far, far away, utilizing a joystick just like the ones they grew up using on their first-person 3D super realistic flight simulator software when they were little tykes. Guys, I really do think that they've been engineering this for a very, very long time. So we find out, though, with this Generation Z, so we got these teenagers now that as they're using these devices and they're being then taken away for punishment or whatever because they're online and they're not paying attention, they got ADD and they're getting into all kinds of trouble and they turn into complete lunatic psychopaths. When they try to take this device away, well, we found out a long time ago looking at dopamine. The dopamine is the addiction drug in the brain. Dopamine is that chemical that your brain produces when you are looking toward the reward. That's a dangling carrot. And things such as sex, cocaine, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, gambling, all these things that typically your mother wouldn't advise. But, you know, some of the thrills of the kill. But those things that you wouldn't want your 13-year-old daughter involved in, you know, and we are dosing our children with the same chemical by allowing them to play online. And I know it sounds ridiculous, but remember, we've discussed that it really, I've spent a lot of years using myself and my family as study subjects on this. And I really believe it has something to do with the fact that why it doesn't affect us as bad as them, because we saw the before world. I didn't even have a computer in my high school. When I graduated, we just were going to get a computer in high school, but it was like after my class graduated. And I had a PC at home, but it was only because my dad was an adult child. You know, he loved his toys. And we didn't do a lot of playing. I mean, it was more discovery. I was learning what a URL was and how to make it do things and how to find URLs, you know, because there weren't very many at that time. There weren't a lot of addresses that actually meant something. And I don't even know if back then we fully had any type of DNS, so it was mostly IP addresses you were typing in to get places. But that changed quickly. But my world was spent outside running around and eating bugs. I never ate bugs. Though accidentally I did a few times on my bike coming down the hill. Ah, a fly just went down my throat. But not on purpose. But, you know, playing hide and seek, running around, getting dirt under your fingernails, bare feet jumping in radioactive puddles back from 1972. We did all those things. We didn't sit inside. We interacted with our peers. We fell down, got hurt, had our feelings hurt. Oh, Mom. They were making fun of me, telling me I had skinny ankles. And you know what? No one ever yelled at the kids making fun of my skinny ankles. No one ever told them that making fun of my last name was rude or hate speech. You know, I took my lumps. I got picked on a lot as a kid until I got older and started to use my mental Swiss Army knife. I started to learn my way around psychology and playing psychology on the bullies. But you get what I'm saying. We dealt with all that stuff. Well, we've gotten rid of all that. All the stuff that made us well-rounded adults who don't get offended by political correctness. We grew up hearing ethnic jokes because guess what? Your grandma lived in the Polish neighborhood and your friend's grandma lived in the Italian neighborhood. They were, everything was segregated still back then. People liked to be with their own. And when you saw off-color jokes like that, though, all right, some were pretty bad. You know, I'm not going to say they all were. There were even women jokes back then. Remember in the 70s? And, you know, bubble-headed bimbo jokes. Whatever. Get over it. If you're going to identify with being a bubble-headed bimbo, and then you're going to cry about it, well, I guess that's your problem. I most certainly don't identify with a bubble-headed bimbo, so you can tell those jokes all day, because sticks and stones might break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Right? Get over it. I heard Nathan Frazier last night doing a show, and it was all about people claiming themselves to be victims. I think we've talked about this before. I think I lost some losers. I think I lost some listeners after I did that show, because I have a pretty big red push button for people who cry victim. You know, I didn't have much of anything when I was a kid. We, you know, my dad was blue collar, and through the 70s and stuff, the economy was kind of sucky, and he got laid off a lot working in the automotive industry. We broke something, we didn't get a new one. We didn't have instant gratification, and that's actually one of the other things. Back in the 70s and the 80s, what we did not have that kids today have is that instant gratification, that feeding the dopamine carrot, right? The more and more and more dopamine you get, the more and more and more dopamine you want. Some of those brain scans have shown, when they've looked at the brains of a psychopath, someone who's diagnosed is having psychopathy, and it's not like, boop, 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 you know, Mike Myers psychopath. We're talking someone with psychopathic disorders, narcissism, and all the stuff that Dr. Simon talked about a lot in his beginning shows, just that narcissistic pathology, where these people constantly need to be the center of attention and they need to have thrills to be able to even function. And if they don't get their thrills, then they can get a little out of hand looking for those thrills. Well, these electronic interactions seem to be causing the same sorts of brain reactions in our kids as that of the brain of a psychopath. And it all revolves around that area of dopamine production. When they've looked at children who are addicted to video games, and the more and more and more they're playing those games, every time some new level of the video game comes about, oh, they get a new dose of dopamine. It's so great. But guys, it's just fueling them. And I really worry, because I think that some of this is intentional. I mean, I saw the beginning of these first-person video games and the fact that it was from the Department of Defense, guys. And it was right around the time where they were thinking about doing these autonomous drones. I think it was absolutely on purpose. But now we've gotten to the point where technology is ubiquitous everywhere, and we're getting ready to launch these CubeSat Internet of Everything connectivity 24/7 in the sky, solar powered, floating, ubiquitous connectivity everywhere. We have Regina Duggan, who kicked off the projects at Google with Levi's, and I'm sure there's many others. Now we got Under Armour with IBM with wearable computing, and you know that's coming. We have Microsoft, as well as Google Verily, Life Sciences, and Zuckerberg, all looking to cure death as a disease, cure cancer in 10 years, make little nanobots in your blood. You know, you got Billy Gates with the Synalogix, genetically engineered, programmable bacteria to live in your gut and be sentry over your health and be able to take control if something goes wrong. It's really got to make you worry how this is going to affect the future of the human race, having an entire generation of psychopaths who go out of control. And we're going to go back now. Let's go look at this Generation Z story, because I want to read this again and then go on to what is even happening to the younger children. So we looked at adults, and he was saying basically what I did. I mean, all these years that you were involved and all this stuff, and you just were 24/7 with the news. There's just so much happening, and it was that dangling dopamine carrot, but you sucked yourself into the machine. You lost a lot of what had been considered your original life, the life outside, the life of green. It's why, guys, you know, anyone can say what they will about the summertime. We've been doing this for 4+ years now. Well, at least just at UCY, it's been just been 4, and then it's been another year plus somewhere else. You know, in the summertime, I decided we just let everything kind of go on hold. We still run our shows. I still cut them every week, but I don't do any type of new programming changes or look for any new shows or do anything big in the summer because I put UCY on life support. You know, we do what we got to do. Some people might run a few rebroads. Every once in a while, I might not have time to cut a show. You know what happens. But I try to go out and be in the sunshine. You know, we get 3 months here in upstate New York, if that. Have decent weather where you can get outside and get some sun. Because then it's going to be like today. Cloudy, cloudy, cloudy. Rain, rain, rain. Or something. Or snow, snow, snow. I didn't say the S word. But that's going to be coming in the not too distant future. So I got 3 months to get out, enjoy it, go travel and see my friends. And that's what I do. You know, that's definitely helped a lot. But I got to tell you, for the other 9 months when I'm trapped in this cave and I let my OCD take over and get me sucked into the machine. So this is what I do. And then I go on a tirade working on stuff. It's not good. It's not good. I think it's almost a defense mechanism to feel like you're almost doing something to help prevent what is happening. Except that the sad fact of the matter is when I really sit and think, what kind of a difference does it make? Maybe, just maybe, I might get 50 people who hear the show after the fact. I don't know. I should see how many people are listening right now. Actually, sometimes we get a good crowd. Probably not Mondays. Everyone feels like me on a Monday. Yeah, so 18, 20 people on a stream, maybe another 50 after the fact on YouTube. So maybe 60 or 70 people's lives on a daily basis that hear my show, and maybe, just maybe, there's one little tidbit they pick up or they read some of those links for more information on the stories that I talk about at the bottom. But is that going to make a big impact on whether or not we are like at the sixth great extinction? You know, and I get really sad when I think about that because we got to stop what's happening. I mean, we have to stop what is happening here. They are not only destroying us from an ecological level with all the pollution. I mean, how many shows do we have about the things that are going on and the radiation and Fukushima and the Monsanto and the glyphosate? And, you know, I mean, so many of us talk about all this stuff. And then we got CRISPR and Bayer and Monsanto all partnering up. Woo! The ultimate destruction of the building blocks of life. That's where we're at right now. And let's go way back. We had nukes. We had them pointed at each other. We had all the tests. We had the fallout. And like I said, in the 70s, we all jumped in puddles and ate snow. We didn't know any better. And now we got droughts and all this quote-unquote climate change. Whether or not it be natural, cyclical, or controlled. Not going to postulate on that, but it's all very possible. But regardless, our climate is screwed up. And I don't think it's going to get any better. And as they push whatever this agenda is that they're pushing, we're going to have this scarcity that is going to happen between food and water. And did you see now they're saying, oh, Earth is leaking oxygen. found it very interesting that just a few years ago we had read about that new breakthrough they had of that super, 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 super absorbent material that absorbs oxygen. And I don't remember what they said. They said a piece the biggest size of a room could suck up all the oxygen on the planet. And then all of a sudden, they announced 2 years later, oh, the Earth seems to be losing oxygen. We're not sure why. Well, maybe it's some of that material you created to suck up oxygen. Tell us the Earth is running out of oxygen. It's running out of water. And climate isn't going to allow us to grow food. And oh my God, we got too many people. And justify GMOs and eugenics and Agenda 21 and climate carbon capping, carbon credits. But then we have these children and this ubiquitous internet and this internet of things that is coming that's going to be the biggest, newest thing in the 21st century, and this internet of everything that's going to include us in this internet of things. And we watch how they have caused us to open our arms, to be addicted to this technology, to accept it without question. Even though every day on this show, I am pointing out some other reason why we shouldn't be embracing this technology. How this technology has been a lie from the very beginning. I've spent my entire adult life selling this to the masses, and it was a lie. I didn't do it on purpose. They lied to me too. The least I can do now is to point out to people how it's all been a lie. How they are taking away things that we didn't even know that we should have been appreciating. Like life. Like reality. Like the green leaves and the fuzzy little chipmunks that live underneath your deck. So, as these kids now have these behavioral, psychological problems after being raised on the computer and having friends on the computer and using the computer to learn things, not learning socialization in person and sitting in the same room together with their backs to each other, texting on a device. And then we look at all this insanity going on and how nobody seems to be paying attention. You want to hear something so disturbing? Last night before I went to bed, I logged in and did my last show titling for the evening and got the schedule ready for Monday morning to post up, pin it to the top of my page. And I happen to see on Facebook, they have the trending. And I know most of you don't use Facebook, but I'll share this anyway. So they have this trending news. And I mean, there have been questions about that trending news. They said they got rid of all the Facebook editors and they were letting AI do that now. And I don't know, sometimes there's some stuff on there that shouldn't have been there. But regardless, so the trending last night, I was looking. We had Kim Kardashian. Course, she had like 225,000 views, and I didn't look if it was a new ass pic or whatever. This is Kim Kardashian. And then we have one about Hurricane, oh, whatever the hurricane is now, Michael, Michelin, something, I think it started with an M. And that had, you know, 1.5 million views. All right, so we got the hurricane is a top number one, and then we got Kim Kardashian's butt or whatever it was number two, and number three trending news, 11,000 views, Donald Trump. And I know by this time nobody wants to hear anymore from Trump. All of us are pretty sick and tired of both Trump and Hillary, you know, their antics and playing juvenile name-calling games when we have the world falling apart all around us. Yet, the majority of the American public seems to think that this is acceptable. I mean, I'm embarrassed for our country, if you want to honestly know. People from other countries are watching this very closely. Is the future of the quote-unquote free world that isn't really that free hangs in the balance? We have Warhawk 1 and Warhawk 2. And neither one of them can be in charge of the button. and they're standing around calling each other names. But as far as the trending, so we got 30 some odd days. We got a month. A month before the selection is made. And remember, too, they've now freely admitted that we've had quote-unquote Russian hackers into the voting system a month before the election. Do you see them doing anything about it? Do you see them putting a stop on everything? Do you see them securing all these machines? Oh, my God. Do you see them going back to paper ballot to make certain that there aren't any issues? No, I don't. I don't think they give a shit. I think it's already set as to who's going to win, so it doesn't freaking matter who hacks in. I couldn't even believe it. 30 days. Now, you'd think that maybe the voting machines being hacked would be the top news with over a million views. Nope. No, it's the hurricane. And then Kim Kardashian's butt. And then Trump with a paltry 11,000 views. 30 days before the election. And then, like I said, I know people are sick of Trump and all the antics, but you would think if there was some news about him 30 days before the election, that everyone would be reading it to see what it was. And it was something to the effect of the New York Times publishing Trump's 1995 tax return at risk of going to jail because he swore he was going to do it. And someone sent them anonymously to the New York Times. And apparently, back in 1995, Trump took $915 million in losses that he has been able to write down for the last 18 years and use those as offsets to paying taxes. He hasn't paid taxes in 18 years. Is that not insane? So that's what his comment meant at the debate last week about not paying taxes and being smart. Oh, I got it now. So this dude, in 30 days, we're going to be voting. So whether or not this dude's going to be the new supreme ruler of the once freest place in the world. And nobody gives a shit. And you want to know why they don't give a shit? Because it's like reality TV, and we're sucked into the machine, and this is all a game, and none of it matters. None of it matters. We are too involved in all the other distractions to really care about what's going on in the real world. The real world, here and now. Like, the people are going to be pushing and controlling that red button. Like, World War III getting ready to touch off in Syria. Hey, I will guarantee you that articles on Syria are probably at the bottom of the pile. You'll probably never see an article on Syria in today's most viral news. It's beyond disturbing, but it all comes back to being sucked into the machine as to why nobody cares and as to why the planet is going to hell in a handbasket. It's been designed that way. It's the lie. It's the lie. All right, let's read this because I want to get to space. I promised you it would be Spacey Monday. Generation Z, online and at risk for today's teens. More followers online may mean fewer friends in real life and a path to behavioral and psychological problems later on. For anyone who's got a kid out there, get them away from the device. Don't give them a cell phone. And I know once they're hooked, guys, you're not getting them off it. That's why I'm not allowing mine to get hooked. And I've explained it to her and I've shown her these stories and it's not going to happen. I've seen it from day one and I said no. No, no, no. I don't want this creature that these devices create. And I'm telling you, it's a huge change. It is not the same child. The rise of social media has made us mostly connected to a society, but it has also coincided with an apparent decline in our mental health. Social media use is proving addictive for some people. And this new digital way of connecting may not satisfy our deep-seated need for true human contact. Teens may be particularly vulnerable to developing hypertexting habits and what is known as Facebook depression. And you know, another thing, you know, just look at this whole augmented reality that they are planning on in the future. And they want to be able to give you your full 24/7 assistant from the time you are born. That's going to augment your brain and your memory and be your best friend in your head. Guys, this is what they're leading us toward. That's what this is all about. This is little mini baby steps further and further down that dark hallway. Don't keep walking. It's not candy behind that door. It's a big scary clown. That's what it is. Like named Pennywise with pointy bloody teeth. Don't go for it. Don't reach for the poison apple. All right, this is where the story started. I am going to kill you while you are both asleep, says the wild-eyed 13-year-old girl as she flailed and kicked her father before biting his arm. This was the second time in less than a week that Heidi had flown into a violent rage because her parents had taken away her Chromebook and her access to social media. And it would be the second time that she would have to be taken to a psychiatric emergency room. When her parents first called for help, they described Heidi as a sweet, happy, loving girl whose teachers had always declared their favorite student. And with a tendency to gravitate toward overachievers, she loved playing soccer and hiking and taking mountain bike rides with her dad, the man she bid. Yes, she loved nature and the world around her until she got sucked into the machine. John and Melanie, supportive, suburban, New Jersey parents with college degrees in their own tech business, were blindsided by Heidi's social media addiction. It all started when she came home in seventh grade with a Chromebook that the school had given her, and she got all sucked into that Google chat and Google communities, and this educational Trojan horse entered their home. And over the course of a year, John and Melanie saw their daughter transform from a sweet, innocent girl who loved spending time with her parents into a sexualized, foul-mouthed, and violent terror. And sadly, she became a girl in need of psychiatric treatment. Now, what worries me is, remember, we have good old Tommy Insel, the former head of the National Institute of Mental Health for the federal government, is now working at Google's Verily. They were going to come up with all kinds of great ways to diagnose and treat mental disease utilizing technologies such as diagnosing through your voice or little nanobots going into your brain to create little chemicals and make you all happy again. So careful what you ask for. Technology providers are going to give you a cure to mental disease, which the technology created. But if you remember that sexualized, hateful little demon was something, and I mentioned this right at the very end of the show Friday, Tay, Microsoft had their little AI Taybot. The rise and fall of Microsoft's Hitler-loving sex robot. Remember that one? Sounds just like this kid, though. So the same thing happened to AI as happened to this teenager being exposed to the internet. A Microsoft experiment has made it clear if we want artificial intelligence in this world, it better not think like us. The tale of this illuminating but aborted millennial-focused project was told most succinctly so far by the Telegraph newspaper in a headline, Microsoft deletes teenage girl after it became a Hitler-loving sex robot within 24 hours. Wow. That deletion sounds like a good move given the transformation in question. But what did Microsoft expect? They crowdsourced the masses for human intelligence, and go figure, they reaped a harvest of ignorance, racism, sexism, and perversion. Yeah, all the good things about humanity, right? To be sure, Microsoft's chatbot Tay, the big-eyed, cute, artfully pixelated, may represent the future. Well, I hope not my future. Chatbots, AI-powered fake people that interact with customers via text messages, have become a huge focus across many industries. And this is just that very next step of being sucked into the machine. Now, not being able to distinguish between reality and the digital world. And I've talked about this before. Reality television was really one of those first things that started to really suck you in and give people trouble distinguishing between what was real and what was not. And you remember even the Kardashians, right? Again, more fake reality TV. Even Trump with his TV show. I don't remember what it was called. Does it want to be a millionaire? No. I don't remember. You're fired. I don't remember what it was called. But again, another dumb reality TV show that gets you all emotionally involved. I really think it was an experiment to kind of blend or bleed that line between what is real and what is not, so you could feel empathy and sadness and happiness for these people that you didn't even know, that aren't even real characters necessarily. Because remember, as the world is infiltrated more and more by artificial intelligence and eventually robots, they want us to respond emotionally to them. The coming of the sex bots. Don't forget virtual reality as well. I just saw that they are able to create matter and antimatter with just a beam of light. This is some experiments they're working on now. They have touchable holograms now. Guys, the future is a very frightening place. And our reality, this world that's being slowly and wantonly destroyed by those who want to control everything and profit from it, we won't have to worry about. You know, those of us who are sounding the alarm will be silenced. We'll be given some sort of online world or drug or something that'll satiate us enough to feel like we're living in a real place, so we don't worry about it anymore. And as these teenagers have never seen the world before computers, never knew about not having instant gratification, and keep demanding the dopamine dose, they're going to keep going back to the well for more. These bots will become like official accounts for chat apps to whom you can text keywords like sports or latest headlines, and they will bring up your stories. And artificial intelligence, of course, starts with human intelligence. AI systems are typically fed big data and the output of some of the world's finest brains. Case in point, Alpha's Google's AlphaGo. Remember, we read about AlphaGo playing the that game, AlphaGo, which is way, way, way more complex than chess. And they beat the world champion with AI. So let's take another step forward. So we looked at, quote-unquote, Heidi becoming this hyper-sexualized, violent teen in need of psychiatric assistance. And I mean, we could go on and on and on. There's a very long story out of Scientific American. There was another study we read too about how they've discovered now that texting even changes our brain waves completely, looking at them in an fMRI. But you guys can read the story. I highly recommend it. I will put it in the notes. But this is the one that I saw first that seriously caught my attention. And this is for a younger child. August 27th, 2016. It's digital heroin. And it literally is, guys. That same chemical in the brain is responsible. How screens turn kids into psychotic junkies. Now, what kind of a future is this planet going to have if they're not only now talking about genetically modifying humans and, you know, push a button and pick the eye color and the hair color in the future and whether or not you're intelligent or you have wings or fangs, but the brains are going to be all messed up too. They're definitely going to have mental problems being raised off the teat of technology. Susan bought her 6-year-old son, John, an iPad when he was in first grade. And I thought, well, why not let him get a jump on things? And I'm telling you what, so many of my friends have done the exact same thing. And I remember when I was at that point, I was like, I don't know. John's school had begun using these devices with younger and younger grades, and his technology teacher had raved about their educational benefits. Yes, they have been touting the benefits of computers and education for a very long time. So Susan wanted to do what was best for her sandy-haired little boy who loved reading books and playing baseball. She started letting John play different educational games on his iPad, and eventually he discovered, again, Minecraft, which the technology teacher assured her was just like electronic Legos. Well, who doesn't love Legos? Now, guys, get your kids real Legos, okay? Turn off the computer and make a mountain of Legos in the corner of the room. Remembering how much fun she had had as a child building and playing with Legos, just like me, Susan let her son play Minecraft in the afternoons. And at first, Susan was quite pleased. John seemed engaged in creative play as he explored the cube world of the game. But then she did notice that the game wasn't quite like real Legos that she remembered. After all, she didn't have to kill animals and find rare minerals to survive and then go to the next level. But John really did seem to like playing, and the school even had a Minecraft club, so how bad could it be? Still, Susan couldn't deny that she was seeing changes in John. He started to get more and more focused on his game and losing interest in baseball and reading while refusing to do his chores. Ding! And some mornings he would wake up and tell her that he could still see the cube shapes in his dreams. And although this concerned her, she thought her son might be exhibiting an active imagination, and as his behavior continued to deteriorate, she then tried to take the game away. But John threw temper tantrums, and his outbursts were so severe that she had to give in, still rationalizing to herself over and over again that, quote, it's educational. But then one night she realized that something was seriously wrong. I walked into his room to check on him, and he was supposed to be sleeping, and I was so frightened. She found him sitting up in his bed, staring wide-eyed, his bloodshot eyes looking into the distance as his glowing iPad lay next to him, and he seemed to be in a trance. And besides herself in panic, Susan had to shake the boy repeatedly to snap him out of it. And distraught, she could not understand how her once healthy and happy little boy had become so addicted to the game that he wound up in a catatonic stupor. Guys, this is what technology is doing to our babies. This is the future of humanity. And we need to stop this, and we need to stop it right now, and we need to stop the devices, the ubiquitous computing devices that are everywhere, that we are integrating into not only our lives, but into our person. They are affecting our brains. They are changing our brain patterns and our behaviors. There's a reason that the most tech-cautious parents are tech designers and engineers. Ding, ding, ding. Because we're the ones who paid a lot of attention, I'm going to tell you. We're the ones who helped build all this and then said, holy shit, something's not quite right. Steve Jobs was notoriously a low-tech parent. And Silicon Valley executives and engineers enrolled their kids in the no-tech Waldorf schools. Google's founder, Serge Brin, as well as Larry Page, went to no-tech Montessori schools, as did Amazon creator Jeff Bezos and Wikipedia founder Jimmy Wales, as well as me. We had no technology in school at all. I'm telling you, I really think that that's what it is. The haves, the before time, and the now time. Many parents intuitively understand that ubiquitous glowing screens are having a negative effect on kids. We see this aggressive temper tantrum when the devices are taken away. And, you know, a friend of mine just told me they had the same issue with their kid. And so the kid just sits online and plays computer games all day now, because otherwise it's a huge battle and a fight. And their wandering attention spans happen when children are not perpetually stimulated by their hyper-arousing devices, which is also affecting them in schools, by the way, because now the teachers standing in front of the classroom giving a lecture can't stimulate the kids' brains enough for them to even pay attention. So worse, we see children who become bored, just like someone with a psychopathy disorder, apathetic, uninteresting, uninterested, when not plugged in. But it's even worse than we think. We now know that those iPads, smartphones, and Xboxes are a form of a digital drug. Recent brain imaging research shows that the effect on the brain's frontal cortex, which controls your executive functioning, including your lack thereof, impulse control, in exactly the same way as cocaine does. Ding! This technology is so hyper-arousing that it raises the dopamine levels, the feel-good neurotransmitter most involved in the addiction dynamic, as much as sex. This is explaining what is happening to our children with technology. Guys, it is all about the dopamine. It is all about addicting our little babies to technology, to open their arms, and we're turning them into junkies. And I know we didn't mean it, but we have to stop it. It says, that's right, your kid's brain on Minecraft looks like a brain on drugs. No wonder we have a hard time peeling kids from their screens, and we find our little ones agitated when their screen time is interrupted. And in addition, there now are hundreds of clinical studies that show that the screen time increases depression, anxiety, aggression, and can even lead to psychotic-like features where the video gamer loses complete touch with reality. And in the clinical work that this psychiatrist has done with over 1,000 teens over the past 15 years, he has found the old axiom of an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure is especially true when it comes to tech addiction. Once that kid is crossed into the true tech addiction, treatment can be extremely difficult. And even in China, they have boot camps where they send tech-addicted children to a cold turkey camp. All right, guys, we're going to hit the space tomorrow. I hope you have an awesome Monday. Make sure you stick around. It's Lonnie Clark. It's live up next. And I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.